Good morning. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Call the committee to order. Today's Wednesday, the 22nd of March, 2006. It's now 8:38 a.m. And members present are Senator Guest, Senator Huggins, myself, Senator Seek, and Senator French. We're going to start today with House Bill 379. And here representing the sponsor is Mike Velasquez. Mike, if you'll put your name on the record, just introduce yourself for the record. We're eager to hear your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer, and he apologizes that he can't be here this morning. House Bill 379 is about a drug known as GHB. GHB is known by many names, but it is gaining popularity around the country as a date rape drug. That is because it is odorless, colorless, tasteless, and easy to slip into a drink and very difficult to detect from a toxicological standpoint. As I'm sure you're aware, tragically, a 16-year-old Chugiak High School student lost her life last summer when she consumed this drug with several older men at a party. What stunned the sponsor about the case wasn't the nature of the crime. We know that these drugs are out there, but that the drug used wasn't even covered under state statutes. That is because, though GHB is a Schedule IV controlled substance, the chemical variations or analogs to GHB are not listed in state statute at all, and since they're not an isomer or salt of isomer of another similar drug, they are not covered under state statute. What HB 379 attempts to do is to correct this oversight. At the same time as we began to research GHB, it became apparent that GHB is listed federally as a Schedule I substance for the same reasons as I answered before. And at the same time, we decided that it was more appropriate to elevate GHB to a Schedule I substance while listing the federally recognized analogs. The reason we believe that GHB and its analogs should be Schedule I is that the primary use of these drugs is in so-called date rape scenarios. And though medical use and industrial applications are protected by HB 379, we believe that HB 379 will clean up our statutes and send a message that these compounds are unacceptable and dangerous. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd answer any questions the committee has.
Questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate your question. Do you have anyone that you'd like to have work with you on the bill, Mike?
Mr. Chairman, we have the Department of Law here to answer questions, and we should have a representative from the State Crime Lab. In previous committees, a lot of discussion has gone on about the chemistry of these analogs, and they were available for committee discussion, but the supporting material from the federal government is in members' packets.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Senator Guest.
Thank you. Michael, what are the uses of this drug that aren't intended or used for human consumption?
Through the chair, Senator Guest, there are some industrial applications, particularly when you start to talk about 1,4-butandiol. That can be an ink stain remover or an industrial solvent. And that is where we worked back and forth with chemical companies on the House side and found language that more closely mirrored the federal. The dilemma was, in previous versions of the bills, we had an analog statute, and an analog statute is premised on when a drug is used for human consumption. The dilemma with an analog statute is, of course, when you get into the chemistry. For example, pseudoephedrine would be considered an analog of methamphetamine, and so it became problematic for the rest of our statutes, and work on the House side stripped that out, but we kept the human consumption line to protect the legitimate industrial uses. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Hearing none. Ms. Carpinetti, does the Department of Law support the bill as it's written today?
Yes, it does.
For the record, Ms. Carpinetti indicated me that the Department of Law does support the bill as written today. Do we have anyone that wants to testify on the bill? No one online? Anyone locally? Not seeing anyone in the audience that wants to testify, we'll close public testimony on the bill. Discussion among the members.
Yep.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, I guess my question for you is, how do I get GHB? Where do I go to buy it?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, GHB is and continues to be illegal in the state. GHB is covered under state law. The dilemma is, if you look on page 2, lines 1 through 4, These are the analogs to GHB, and while some are precursors, what happens is when you ingest these chemicals, they metabolize into GHB. And so they can effectively be used as the same thing. They are sold often on the internet as they will take the word GHB and use it in different ways, such as great, hairy, bacchanalia or something. They will make up an analog to the name that then is used to sell it. They are also sold under the terms as liquid ecstasy, blue nitro, but often on the internet. And since they're not covered under state statute or sold for purportedly legitimate purposes, it's a real problem federally and at the state level.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, in that case, I will move CS for House Bill 379 with attached physical note and individual comments. Committee.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, this bill is moved on to the next committee of referral. We'll take a short recess. We're going to be back on the record. Next, we're going to take a look at House Bill Number 318. And we have with us today a representative of the prime sponsor, and we're going to discuss this bill a little bit among members. I don't think we have anybody signed up to testify on the bill. Does anybody in the audience wanted to testify on this bill today? But Senator French, you wanted to make a couple of comments.
I did. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I took the opportunity yesterday to reread the Kelo case, the case that's sort of at the heart of the bill that we're doing here. In the Kelo case, I'm sure, as Mr. Johnson knows and the other members are aware, was an urban redevelopment plan in which a somewhat downtrodden part of a city was going to be revitalized, and the upshot was that some folks that had lived there for a long time were going to lose their property because a local decision-making body had decided to sort of remove them for their property and to do some economic development. Pfizer, for example, a pharmaceutical company, was going to build a plant there. And as the facts in that case pointed out, there was a woman, Wilhelmina Derry, had been born in her Fort Trumbull house in 1918, had lived there her entire life. Her husband, Charles, had lived in the house since they were married some 60 years ago. And yet they were going to lose their home because of this economic development. And, of course, the 5-4 decision upheld that taking, if you will. And Justice O'Connor's dissent, I think, is really sort of the genesis of this bill. Justice O'Connor was quite opposed to this decision. And she said, and I think this is the sentence that's rallied a lot of folks, she said, under the banner of economic development, all private property is now vulnerable to being taken and transferred to another private owner, so long as it might be upgraded, i.e. given to an owner who will use it in a way that the legislature deems more beneficial to the public, that is, in some private method. But she says that takes out the public use phrase from the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment. And so, to me, that's sort of the decision we have to make in this bill is, what does public use mean? Because that's what the Constitution allows. You can take property for a public use as long as you pay just compensation. And the majority believe that public use meant upgrading property if a local decision-making body has authorized that. And of course, the dissent said no, that completely washes away the public use doctrine. And Justice Thomas, who wrote a secondary dissent, went on to point out that he would revisit the public use clause and consider returning to the original meaning of the public use clause. And he says that's that the government may take property only if it actually uses or gives the public a legal right to use the property. So I guess as I look over the bill, you know, I see two parts of the bill. There's the economic development portion, which I think most of us are agreed upon is too great a power to put in the hands of government, to transfer property from one owner to another just to upgrade it, to make it better, to you know, make it more profitable even. And so I think that's the portion of the bill that I'm wholeheartedly behind. The part that I think is troubling some of us with respect to hunting and fishing rights or access to state waters or recreational uses is the part that would eliminate that sort of taking with respect to someone's home. And as difficult as that issue is, it seems to me that at least under Justice Thomas's reading, that's a public use, that there are times when you need a sliver of someone's land to get access to hunting or fishing grounds, where you need some portion of private land for a public use, and as long as there's, I mean, that's the dilemma that I see in this bill, and I'm just voicing my concerns because you know, this bill, if it becomes law, would, I think, restrict what's put in the Constitution.
Other questions or comments, discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, Craig, for the record, Craig Johnson.
Go ahead, Craig.
And you're absolutely right. It does that. And then let me tell you a little bit about how that got mixed into what no one seems to disagree with, the private-to-private transfer. As we started researching this and going to other states, the overriding problem was this, with this, was you're taking people's homes. You're talking about taking the person's home who was born there in 1918. That became the egregious offense. In almost every state we researched, it almost says, you know, this wouldn't have been so bad if it had been, you know, Farmer Jones's back lot they were taking. But when you start taking people's homes, and that started ringing, that started to be a very consistent issue throughout every state that we see enacting some type of legislation like this, that the home takes a little higher priority than just land or real estate. And so we started looking at that and saying, let's protect the home, because personal property rights is one of the most important things that we have in value as Alaskans. So in a way to protect that, we started looking and said, well, let's just protect the home. You can't take someone's home. Then we started looking at those issues that you talked about, the public use, the access, and we built things into this bill that will protect those very things that you've talked about. And we decided to narrow it down to a very narrow piece of property that is a sanctuary, that truly is a person's castle. If the American dream is to own a home, the second part of that dream ought to be to keep it. So that, therefore, that's the genesis of where this became. And in working with lawyers, 14 or 15 lawyers in every department of the administration, realtors, actually the Alaska Conservation Voters, everyone has had their fingerprints on this bill. And we've come up with, no one disagrees that someone's home should be treated a little different than even a business. In prior committees, we had businesses, we were talking about putting businesses in there. That didn't quite rise to the level as someone's home dwelling, where they raise their kids, that statute. So the decision is, yes, is it a public use, but does an airport or a school or a highway, is that public use rise to the same level as a maybe a select group or a minor group recreating? So there's varying uses. Certainly an airport or a school is overall public use for everyone in the community. But is a hockey rink or is a boat launch, does that rise so that everyone, even though a small number of people in that community, does that rise to the same level as an airport or a road? The sponsor's belief was that it didn't quite get there, that the home overrode that, and that recreation didn't quite rise to the public use with those very exceptions that we put in there, access, trails, the constitutional guarantees. So I think we've done exactly what you've outlined, and I think that you're right in line with this bill. The things that you've outlined for access, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are in here. That's done. But what you can't take is where someone hangs the little horseshoe over their door and calls it home. And that's what we try to protect. And that's clearly a policy decision. I mean, that is what this is all about. You're going to have to reach down and decide, is a home more important than recreation? Does recreation rise to the level of the other public uses you've described? Those are very clear policy decisions, and that's why we go through this process for you to make that.
But yet we haven't done that. We've said you can't take it if it's within 250 linear feet of that person's home.
That is the definition.
So we're not talking about where you hang the horseshoe. We're talking about in the vicinity of where a person would have to throw the horseshoe several times.
That is certainly true, sir. But that started out as 1,000 feet, and it's now to 250. And I think it would be the purview of this, if this body chose that should be 1,000 or 2,000 or 150, that's certainly within the purview of this committee to do. This bill has been a genesis from day one. The pride of ownership of this kind of went away when we brought all the people together and put them in a room and said, let's develop the best policy for the state.
Sponsor, I would think that would be what her prime objective was in the first place.
Absolutely.
So, other questions? Senator Guess?
Yes. Thank you, Craig. The difficulty I have in your response to Senator French is that recreational isn't defined, we've talked about this a little bit. It's on page 5, line 6, and line 9, and then on page 6, line 4, which restricts paths. Yesterday after committee, we were having a fun discussion of, if you're a bad fisherman or hunter, is it recreational? And if you're a good one, is it then, you know, subsistence or food? And how do you actually distinguish recreational?
And yes, ma'am, thank you. That is a very difficult argument. I would contend that me sitting in my house and watching TV is recreation too. But so where do you stop the definition of recreation is, and where do you start it? I mean, it very much like you said, if you're a bad fisherman, or is it recreation? If you're a good fisherman, or is it subsistence?
You're a bad fisherman, you're called a vegetarian.
That's correct. Yeah, I agree with that. So that is a very difficult thing. And so as opposed to defining what recreation was, we attempted to define recreational facility, because we're really talking about the facilities that are going to be occupying the land. And just because you have a skating rink doesn't mean you can't play basketball on it, or just because you have a hockey rink doesn't mean you can't use it for tennis and other things. So instead of defining, you know, what the recreational opportunity was, we decided to try to define the facilities and made a stab at that. So I just don't know that we could define recreation.
Yeah, I guess the difficulty for me is, I appreciate that you did facility. You did facility or project, which project can be anything. Mm-hmm. And then it's the primary purpose, which is recreational.
Right.
So then we're still coming down to, what does recreational mean? And I mean, I think project, anything falls under it. So what is a recreational project?
We have, Madam Senator, we've taken stabs at that and would love to have your input.
It
is very difficult. And I'm not sure that we could probably make this a 200-page bill by just listing what we think is recreational. And once again, for simplicity, we went to try to define the recreational facilities.
Our intent here is to try not to end up with 200-page documents in court trying to define that.
Absolutely. And we also tried to define as much as we thought we could so that we wouldn't do that, and back to the intent language in the front, so that at least they'll know our intent. If they don't know specifically what we want, at least they know what we intended on doing. Yes, sir.
Senator French.
Thank you. The conflict I'm seeing, or at least the rub I'm seeing, is in the intersection, if you will, with public use and recreational. That's where I see the rub. When this Justice O'Connor sort of made categories of what public use is, and she said there's two easy categories, and then there's a third hard one, and the third hard one is where the Kelo case came down. But the two easy categories, she says, are relatively straightforward and uncontroversial. First, the sovereign may transfer private property to public ownership, such as for a road, a hospital, or a military base. I think we're all agreed that that's, you know, absolutely power that the sovereign has to retain. Or the sovereign may transfer private property to private parties, often common carriers, who make property available for the public use, such as a railroad, a public utility, or a stadium. Those are the examples she draws.
But I see in at least two of those places where our recreational sort of idea conflicts. And a road is the first one. If a road is being placed to a canoe launch on a river, where are we now? You know, one side would say this is purely recreational. The other side would say it's a road. You know, and Justice O'Connor says this is an easy case. A road's an easy case. And so there you are in front of a judge, and this poor judge is going to be scratching his or her head trying to figure it out. And the same holds true for a stadium in the second example, which is also supposed to be an easy example. If a stadium is, the Seahawk Stadium in downtown Seattle is probably a good example. They built one, tore it down, and built another. And you know, is that for economic development or is it for recreation? And I think probably you could argue either way. But, the stadium is supposed to be an easy example. And so I'm just concerned that recreation is leading us into an area where it's just going to be very hard to define, as Senator Guest has pointed out.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my mind, what we're witnessing is a swing of the pendulum. The alarm bell went off is what caused you to do this, working on this with a sponsor on this bill. That my neighbors, your neighbors, the people in the gallery today, in the neighbor piece of this, says, the system has gone too far. We don't like that, and that's why we're sitting here looking at it. And now you represent the pendulum swinging in the other direction, and our dilemma is bringing some definition to what that's going to be. And quite frankly, the part about a road to the canoe launch, there's a provision in the bill that says the legislation or the legislature has approved by law the transfer of the property. I mean, that's your provision for that. For that road, is that correct?
Yes, sir. And also there is a very specific provision that says a path, trail, road, or site for which no reasonable alternative exists and necessary to establish public access along a publicly owned waterway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a very specific language that allows for a road to that recreational facility.
Right.
So that is also in there. And the stadium would also fall into that.
Right.
If it's the public use thing voted, the legislature decided to pass it.
And you know, quite frankly, what I hear is that most of us sitting here today do not want the pendulum to swing too far and are concerned about the safeguards. The unfortunate part about in our culture, when the pendulum swings, we appear in all too many cases to let it swing too far, and I think that's what our conversation is about. However, sometimes that's the nature of the beast. There are some elements here that, as I hear us discussing, it makes me a little uncomfortable. But I think we all realize in the nature of doing legislation that it's quite often very dynamic, particularly in something of this nature. And I would prefer to be protective of the castle versus leaving the loophole for those that could attack the castle. So I'm more supportive than not of your bill.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Senator Guess.
To follow up on Senator French and Senator Huggins' comments, I guess my difficulty with that exemption, Craig, on page 6, line 4, is that rather than primarily for recreation, so I don't think the example that Senator French said would fall under this, or it could be argued that it couldn't, unless I'm reading this incorrectly. If it's a road to a canoe launch, it's primarily for recreation.
Madam Senator, this is language that was drafted by the Department of Natural Resources, and I think the intent was that if you had a recreational trail that wasn't accessed, that the primary use wasn't recreation, the primary use was transportation to and from and guaranteeing access to. If that has been vetted by their attorneys and they're comfortable with that, and I think there may be someone online with DNR to speak to that, but this is language that they created specifically to guarantee access. And if it doesn't do that, then we want to make sure, because that was our goal, is to not have someone say, well, you can't do this. This is a road for recreation. So the specific reason was to prevent that from happening. If this language doesn't do that, then we certainly need to get back with the attorneys that drafted it and clarify that. They believe it does.
Okay. I guess we can take a look at that in committee. The other question I had just came off of Senator French's reading of the opinions. And O'Connor saying hospital is an easy case, but am I reading this bill correctly? And I'll ask Senator French that if it's a for-profit hospital, then it would be excluded.
If the for-profit hospital was defined as a private person, yes, and I think that's right.
It's a not-for-profit hospital,
right.
Then it would be allowed.
It would be a public use
versus a for-profit.
I think that's right.
I think probably all of us are in favor of the concept of the bill. I think that probably we're just talking about refinements to the bill to where we reach a comfort level that it's not having some unintended consequences here that we would find unacceptable. I think the thing that we probably all of us would agree on, that the term public use does not mean just to be able to expand public dollars in terms of tax revenue. That's an unacceptable purpose to use eminent domain. That the public right is giving that public a right to use the property, it should be maybe have some constraints or some checks and balances as to the process. AML has come to me and asked me to include under this legislative exemption that they also be allowed to, that would be in, to say that a borough assembly or city council through public hearing and public process be able to override the provision. And I'd be eager to hear what your comments are on that. Alaska Municipal League, I should.
Actually,
go ahead.
There's two questions there. One is, would the local power extend to, because the way the bill's phrased, the legislature can approve a economic taking, if you will, a private-to-private transfer. But I don't think the legislature can approve a recreational facility. The exemption exists in subsection D, not in subsection E. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
So there'd be, even if we were to add the local option, if you will, or the local authority, it would never extend to a recreational facility. It would only extend to a private-to-private transfer, which is really the kind that I thought we were trying to eliminate altogether. And I think that the committee feels most strongly about.
Mr. Johnson?
Did I confuse things?
I think I can answer that. To start with yours, I think that it is not the intention. It was the intention to always have that escape clause for regardless of the project. If this bill is drafted in such a way that it doesn't allow for, if there's absolute moratorium on the transfer and that, you know, we decide we want to bring the Seahawks to Juneau and we want to build a stadium and do that, that should be allowed. And if that's deemed recreation and everyone's behind it. So that is not the intent of this, was to exclude recreation. We wanted to have that ability, because we have struggled with what that loophole is going to be and the crystal ball effect that we've not been very good at, quite honestly. So we would not in any form or fashion want to have a complete moratorium without some type of process that would allow you to say, okay, this bill doesn't fit this peg, so we want to. So it would be appropriate in that case, and I haven't had a chance to really scrutinize the language, to add a section like that says if it is determined that it's a recreational property is good for the public, and that we would do that we would allow that out for that. But I think that's covered if it's deemed legal by the legislature. But I'd have to get an attorney to look a little more closely at that, and I'm not sure he can do it at this point either. But would be happy to have that escape clause in either
recreational section.
Yes. To answer the question about the municipal league having a municipality having some type of overriding ability, we haven't discussed it specifically, but I think that type of scrutiny, as long as it wasn't a blanket, they started asking, with, we want to be excluded from this, we ought to have the total ability to make that decision. That's a little too far. To put it, and I think that Senator Huggins and I had a discussion about, you know, taking it to a vote. So at what level does that approval lie? Is it a vote of the people that would allow for this project to go through? Is it a vote of the governing body to allow it to go through? Or is it three commissioners in a room that decide it's okay? Or is it a bureaucrat, you know, down the road? There are varying levels of approval within the municipality. If that approval level met a standard that protected that home and protected that property and protected those citizens, like the intent of this bill, I think you'd have very little grief in that if it rose to that level. We established a very high level of override for the legislature to make a decision. That's not an easy process, as evidenced by sitting in front of committee after committee and trying to get a bill through. It's a difficult process. It's very well vetted. People have a right to testify. There are both sides of the issues aired out, and deliberative people make a decision. If that same type of process were in place for a municipality, I think you'd probably meet very little resistance. But I think it needs to rise to that level. I think a public vote is something you couldn't support. Certainly an assembly changes with the wind, as does the legislature at times. So I think as long as that approval level rose to the appropriate level of accountability
and public scrutiny, I think you'd have very little difficulty getting that to happen. But I think it does need to rise to that level. I don't think it needs to be two commissioners in a room deciding they want a house.
I don't think anyone would ever approve that.
Thank you.
No one on this committee would approve that, I bet you. But I think what we are trying to get at is somehow or another that a decision of that magnitude should be made in the full light of day. And
absolutely.
Should allow for public hearing and for the people to express their view on something like that. And at the same time, you know, I think we're very cognizant of trying to preserve the rights of the individual homeowner or the private landowner, quite frankly. I'm not just all interested in looking at the private homeowner as much as I think those same things sometimes can be pressures put on the private landowner as well. And that could be because of the complex legal situations that we live in today. A mom-and-pop grocery store on the corner, it might be where they live, but it's owned by a subchapter S corporation.
Absolutely.
And so all of a sudden this corporately owned property is, which is their home, and is subject to a taking without the protections that we would give to someone else if they privately owned their home. So, you know, I think some of those things have to be part of what we look at too. Senator French?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to Mr. Johnson's concerns about delegation, if you will, of the eminent domain authority, that was part of the problem in the Kelo case. The city council
delegated it
yeah. to a development corporation, a nonprofit entity. But yeah. you know, they said, "Well, you guys go off and do your thing," and they went off and did their thing, and it meant that you know Wilhelmina Dairy was getting put out of her house, yeah. which I think a city council would never have done. You know, Wilhelmina and her husband appears in front of the city council and says, you know, "I was born in this house, and my husband and I have lived there 60 years." I think they would have jumped back, but you know, when there's no real accountability in the decision maker, then you have these abuses.
I saw an interesting one last night, a brand new one. I happened to turn the TV over, and somewhere in New York, where the mayor was going to attempt to use eminent domain to take a privately owned golf course and give it to the homeowners in the area to increase the value of their property. Which I thought, whoa, you know, in a town that already had 8 municipal golf courses. So,
but in this, Mr. Chairman, in the same token, I read accounts, and I'm not sure where the truth lies in Anchorage with, you know, the trails business and taking pieces of people's property. I don't know whether it's their house or not, but at least some people are upset with the process there. And I don't know where the truth lies, because sometimes there's a little bit of skewing in the media.
Mr. Chair.
Senator. Yes.
Thank you. Two things that have come up as in this discussion that are concerns of mine. One is, if I was going to get around Section D, I would just make a nonprofit entity, which these days with economic development is kind of how it's done. I mean, it's always been a concern in this bill, and when you highlighted it on the Kelo case, because I believe if it's a nonprofit entity, it doesn't fall under this, even if it's for economic development. The second one, on the legislature has the approval by law, although I agree with Craig on how difficult it can be to get a bill through this process, I've also seen amendments put into bills at the final hour that never have gotten a public hearing. So I guess I too have a concern, although I appreciate kind of that sentence, and I don't think anyone here would allow that to happen. You're making law for a long time, and someone finds a title and says, well, we're having a real difficult time with, you know, this couple in this area, and it doesn't necessarily have to have a public hearing or be in the light of day. So it, just to know that we are setting up that situation here, where although we know the process, and the process for 99% of the legislation goes through that, there's a good 1%, especially in the second year, the last 24 hours of the second year that happens. And so I do have a slight concern over that.
Madam Senator, two things. I think that a nonprofit, by definition, and I'm going to yield, but I think that that is considered a private person. By definition, in Alaska, a corporation, a business, though that is considered private, so that would be a private-to-private, so that would be.
Okay.
That is. And you're right about things slipping through, but, you know, it's the best we got.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed it. Did you say to exclude nonprofits or include them?
No, it seemed as if they were excluded, but I think I've been corrected.
Okay, so nonprofits are subjected to the
yes,
same?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. As far as I know in this, no one's excluded.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't our intention.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a very important point because if my reading right now, the IRS and some of the other agencies are looking at the business of profit versus nonprofit because I think over time some very innovative people are skewed the quote nonprofit organizations and what they mean and how they operate. So may not be reflective of what you see when you see the title nonprofit on it.
Mr. Chairman, a lot of, you know, to address your question about businesses and all property, a lot of different states have taken different approaches to fixing this problem. One state has implemented law that if you take someone's property, private, home, whatever, that you have a limited time to use that property, and if you don't use that property for the express purpose, it goes back to the original purchaser. They have right to buy it at either appraised value or what they paid or less. There's a state that is saying if you're going to take any property by eminent domain, you will pay 1 point a variable of the appraised price. It escalates the price of projects, but it kind of puts fairness in. So a lot of different states are approaching the same problem from different aspects. This is the one that the representative has chosen. Maybe a combination is order. Maybe if we were to incorporate something along your lines that if a business is taken, that the owner of that business has the right to get it back if it's not used for original purposes, or some type of multiple, 1.5 times of the appraised value, something that would, if they really want it, they're really going to have to pay for it, and it, you know, kind of gives that business an opportunity to go do a going out of business and a grand opening sale. So it sort of does a hold harm, not entirely hold harmless because you can't get back everything, but there are ways to address your concerns. This bill didn't deal with businesses because, once again, as we researched other states, the home seemed to rise to a level above business and private property other than the home. And as we go through the states, home kept sticking out and jumping out at you. Is that the egregious thing about the Kelo case is you took someone's home.
Yep, and I understand that, but I guess I would go back to that the public use purpose, and I don't believe that I want to interpret that in any respect to mean just be able to reap greater public dollars in terms of tax revenue.
No argument there.
And so I want to take a look at that.
I think the next question is, do you want to, public benefit, does that include a small group's recreational opportunities? Or, I mean, if it's everyone's recreational, is that public use? If it's just a small group or a select group or a soccer versus a football versus a baseball versus hockey, so you have a minor group, does that also rise to the level of public use? So that's another balancing act that you certainly have to do, sir.
Well, I understand that. I've never seen somebody take somebody's backyard for a little league baseball field. There's generally a lot of municipal property around to be able to do that. I've never seen that happen. I'm not sure that if we're creating a solution to a hypothetical problem or not.
Well, we certainly don't want to see it either.
And sometimes we have overreactions to hypothetical problems.
Certainly
unintended consequences.
I think that's the pendulum that the senator was speaking of.
Yeah, you know, I guess the one other thing that I would kind of like to discuss before we set the bill aside to be able to take a look at, I'm sure we're going to have some suggested amendments, is in the area of 250 linear feet, that continues to be an object of discussion, and I have heard from people that say everything from, and they go back up to well over 1,000 feet. Some folks that don't want anybody within their neighborhood, you know. But I understand that this section primarily came about as a result of the coastal trail issue, as far as that distance concerned. Am I correct there? Or am I even close?
Well, sir, you're close, but not entirely. About the time this bill was introduced, the coastal trail was totally taken off the table as a result of the Anchorage Assembly passing an ordinance saying you can't take recreational property for recreational uses. So they have something in there that prevents this. This came about, like I said, it started out as 1,000 feet. And last week, the talk shows in Anchorage were blasting this bill. The conservative talk shows were saying, this bill doesn't protect us against the coastal trail. It doesn't do this. It doesn't do that. It needs to be more. It's only this amount. We need to protect ourselves from the municipality. So we were taking heat from the homeowners of that trail. I relayed this to Senator Guest. I got a call after our last meeting saying it's not 250, it's 278, because that's how far it is to my property. So it really doesn't. Will it do something? I think that's off the table. This, to say this is arbitrary would be probably an inaccurate accuracy. I mean, like I say, it started, it was balanced, and came down to that. Started off as a 40-acre plot in the original bill, and now it's down to about 4. There's no magic to it, and it wasn't designed to do anything. I mean, it's not 278. There's no magic number in that 250. That's a pretty good toss of a rock in that horseshoe we talked about to get it 250 feet. It ensures a certain amount of. The reality is there's not a lot of four acre lots in any of our homes. This protects someone out, and if you've got a 40 acre place out and they need part of it, at least it still gives you that ability to have some privacy if someone came in and took a portion of your property in a more rural setting. So it was kind of designed to buffer in more of a rural area. So we don't think it really has a lot to do with the coastal trail as much as it does just privacy, and that's a good distance.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I can see scenarios where some people might be bothered by 250 feet. My good friends in Mat-Su, however, are not part of those.
Yeah.
They will cheer that number and say, let's get some exponential numbers and put against it and expand it. So I'm supportive of that number. And if it's going someplace to go in the other direction, get it bigger, not smaller.
Yeah. And I understand exactly what we're trying to do there, but I'm going to suggest some additional language to that particular section. Because I support that as long as we are not somehow or another putting ourselves in a position where we're denying access to state-owned lands or waters. And
sir, and hopefully we've excluded that in the language.
That's what I want to.
A lot of attorneys have looked at it that is a lot smarter than I am, and if somebody's going to wave a flag and say, no, you haven't, and we want to make sure that language is in there.
My son's an attorney. One thing he told me about attorneys is that they're wrong 50% of the time. One of them wins, one of them loses.
That's why I think we're glad we have 14. We're going to have at least 7 winners.
he says he likes to win more than lose. I think we've got some things that we need to we'll look at. We're going to take a look at that concern about paragraph D there. Couple others, and we'll be able to get this bill out of here, I think, without too much more delay. And we've still got a little time to work on it. We've got how many days left in the session?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would like to take this opportunity to compliment Mr. Johnson. This is the third hearing we've had on this bill in front of this committee, and I think he's been doing a great job.
Yeah. I appreciate
it's
that.
It's not easy, and I just wanted to say I appreciate
this committee. It is actually one of the I don't want to say easier, but the nature of the committee and the conversation on and the attempt to get at the root issues makes it very easy. You don't have to put the formality sometimes get in the way, but I appreciate the chairman's leniency with
that. Well, we have one objective here, and that's to try to get a better bill out of here. Sometimes, as you saw earlier, there wasn't any improvement we could do to the bill.
Well, since we both agree on that, let's just move it and be done.
I'm sure we'll be moving it soon.
Thank you, sir.
And are there any other questions or comments this morning?
Senator Huggins? Comment. I think, Greg, I would encourage you to have some additional eyes in DNR, take a look at this and get multiple perspectives, if possible, of potential impacts on recreational access.
And I see that Wynn Menefee must be who's working with you over there at DNR, because he was online if we had any questions this morning. Is that correct?
We've had several people. And actually, we kind of, early on in this process, instead of having me try to deal with multiple attorneys, the administration kind of assigned us.
John Baker.
Actually, Peter Putzier with the Administration Department of Law. And so everything has been filtered with him. So are those names familiar? Have you dealt with, are those the people that you've dealt with in terms of DNR and those other amendments? Or?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mr. Menefee, are you still online? Is he still online? Are you there, Wynn?
Yes, this is Wynn Menefee. I am online.
Good morning, Wynn. This is Senator Seekins. If I have any questions, I can call you. You're pretty well spun up on the bill?
Yes, that would be fine.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, we're going to set this bill aside. And we're going to look at House Bill.
No.
That's it for the
day?
That's it for the day. Well, that's good. We've got a little bit of time to get ready for Senator Stevens' address to the body. Tomorrow, we have House Bill 408 and House Bill 272. And so we will, at 9:30, adjourn the meeting for the day.
Thank you, sir.
All